They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, happy 4th of July, everybody. Welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. We got a quick show today. Free agency happened, and too much happened over the last couple days that we couldn't go another week without talking about this. There's just so much to talk about. And unfortunately, not going to have the full team today. Justin Marcus, again, the guy's just, you know, he's always busy with the family. He just doesn't care about us, Russ. He really doesn't care about us as much as we would like him to.
Oh, I'm sure he'd be a good family man.
Oh, absolutely. But we have you. We have the stat man. And when it comes to free agency, that's kind of the man you want to have, because you can break down some of this stuff that's just absolutely crazy. But first and foremost, how you doing today, buddy? Excited to have a nice little long weekend to relax?
I'm thrilled, man. This is one of the best weeks in sports, really.
Oh, yeah.
It's Canada Day, right? 1st of July, and they celebrate it by opening NHL free agency. Awesome. And then we have the 4th of July, where we're also going to celebrate hockey by eating copious amounts of hot dogs in the name of Phil Kessel.
Absolutely. That's how I celebrated the 4th of July. I don't know about you, man. I mean, if you're not gorging yourself in the name of a heavy-set white man who plays hockey, I don't know what you're doing with your life. You may have made a wrong turn at some point.
You just might have.
But before we get to that, we talked about it last week. I want to talk about it a little bit this week. The Rocket Mortgage wrapped up at Detroit Golf Club recently, and this was, I as we discussed, I was there almost every day. This was an amazing event, so much fun. Really cool for the city of Detroit, and sounds like it's going to be a hit for years to come. Bit of a shootout. The winner finished 25 under, which for you non-golfers, that's a lot. That is a lot to shoot. Relative unknown named Nate Lashley, who he had four really, really, really good days. And he captured his first win on the PGA Tour. But Russ, I want to ask, because I know it was discussed a lot over the final days in the media as he was getting closer. Do you know a little more the story of Nate Lashley?
I briefly read about it earlier today, but no, I did not know it at all.
I mean, this is a story that we're kind of familiar with, as we had a guy play for U of M basketball who had a similar thing. Lashley was a really, really good college golfer. During his junior year, decides to fly home with his dad, his mom, and his girlfriend. Dad was a pilot, and they got in a plane crash, and he lost his mom, dad, and girlfriend. And just, you know, I mean, that'd be tough for anyone to rebound from. And this guy took some time. He got away from golf, just kind of decided he wasn't really there, didn't really want to mess with it. And then a couple years ago decided, you know what, no, this is what I want to do with my life. You know, I'm really good at it. And goes on and wins a PGA Tour event at the age of 36. That's not something a lot of guys do when their first time at the age of 36. So, I mean, it's a heart-wrenching story, but it's an amazing story in the fact that he was able to come back, he was able to turn his life around, and now he's a PGA Tour winner.
Yeah, it's a great story for the strength of the human spirit. It is absolutely amazing, but God, I wish it wasn't a story, because it means that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, but one thing I do want to bring up, and when I heard it at first, my brain immediately kind of agreed, but then as I thought about it, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I see the similarities, but you, sir, have no right to make that comparison. And that was during the event, Lashley had about 3-4 holes to go, and Nick Faldo, who calls the, you know, PGA Tour events with Jim Nantz, they're kind of the pair. Faldo said, if you think about it, Lashley's story is comparable to the city of Detroit. Absolute rock bottom, and then climbed its way back, starting to turn its way around and climb back up. Yeah, did we hit rock bottom? Yeah, we did. We were really, really not a great place. But who are you, a man from Britain, to tell us that we're, you know, to give us the seal of approval that we've turned it around? this city's been turned around, in my opinion, for quite a few years, because as someone who's in their 30s, I can remember all of my 20s being able to go down to the city of Detroit and not fear for my life. So for him to say that, it kind of bothered me a little bit. I mean, I know this doesn't really have a lot to do with sports other than it's a PGA Tour event, but as Detroiters, we got to kind of say, you know what, at some point you guys got to stop thinking that if you go out in the city of Detroit, you're automatically going to get shanked or you're going to get robbed. Like, that's not how it is anymore. You know, there's crime in New York. There's crime in Chicago. There's crime in Los Angeles. It happens everywhere. At some point, you got to start accepting we're just a normal major city, not like death capital of the world.
Oh, my, that is so profoundly tone deaf, too. So, yeah, first off, to your thing, yeah, hey, go down to Detroit. There's some great things to do there.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get hurt. It's a good city.
Well, right? We're not going to say you're not going to get hurt. You could get hurt because you could get hurt anywhere in the world, but you don't
have a higher chance.
You don't have a higher chance of getting hurt by entering the city of Detroit than you do going to, you know, the middle of Brooklyn.
Right. No, and that whole narrative is so tired and outdated. But then to compare it to someone losing to all of his loved ones
exactly.
in one fell swoop, like what? How are you comparing the two? How are you desensitizing and dehumanizing this tragic thing that happened to him to be like, oh, I got to take a shot at Detroit not being safe? What?
Exactly. Like, I heard it, and you know what? Like, for a brief moment, my brain went, I see the comparison to two scenarios that they were down and had to work their way up. But it's like, but you know who can say that? Mike Tirico. You know who can say that? Kid Rock. Any of the people who have actually been here the entire time. Not a guy who travels from city to city and says, oh yeah, I had a chance to check out the city. No, you didn't. You had the club, you had the town car drive you to the golf course and you happened to look out your window for 2 minutes along the way. It's a difference here. I mean, even if Jim Nance had said it, I think I still would have taken a little bit of offense, but it's like, you know what? Jim Nance has been here before. He's called, you know, football games here. He's called Final Fours here. He's at least been to this city enough times to have an opinion of it. This is the first time you've ever stepped foot in Michigan other than when you played on a PGA event, and none of those were in Metro Detroit.
And I don't think Jim Nance would say something obtuse either.
Exactly, he wouldn't. I mean, he wouldn't. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, there are people who can say this and people who can't say this. You and I saying it, okay, it's acceptable. Because guess what? We're from here. We were born and raised here. Maybe not smack dab in the middle of the city. But I've spent the last 30 years of my life living 15 minutes away from Detroit. So I at least know enough of it to, you know, be able to speak educated about it. It's just, and again, this is a little out of the way of sports, but it's one of those things where you hear it, and the question, I guess it's a long walk to ask the question, but the question I have to ask you is there ever going to be a day that we can stop having to defend ourselves as a not dangerous place to live?
Probably not in our lifetime.
It's sad to say. I mean,
it'll have to be something where you only see the evidence of it in history books. It won't be something that one ignorant person could say to another person.
Well, absolutely, because, I mean, if you think about it, when our grandparents were our age, Detroit was a great place to be. People came down here all the time for a million different things, and then it got bad, and it took a long time to rebound. But the fact of the matter is, Detroit has actually become a place where, like you said, there's a lot to do down there. I mean, you go from Comerica and, you know, Hockey Town to the water, it's a great area to be. Are there still some bad spots? Yes, there are bad spots everywhere. There's no one place in the world where you can say, nope, we are 100% safe all the time. Because if there was, everyone would want to live there. But there's some great, great places down there. It's amazing down in Detroit. And it's a fun place. And the fact that we're still getting stereotyped as, like, the place you're going to get robbed at, it's starting to get annoying, because getting back to the sports, it makes it not as appealing of a place for these players to want to go, because all they hear is the stereotype. Do I want to go to, you know, do I want to go to Toronto or Chicago where it's a little better, or do I want to go to Detroit where I can make more money, but I'm probably going to get robbed every day going to work? It's just annoying.
Yep. It's annoying and inaccurate.
Absolutely it is. But, yeah, again, long ways out of the way for that. But I did want to point out that Lashley's story, it is a sad one. It's, you know, it's one that you're happy to see. I mean, for as much of a happy ending as it can have, it has. I mean, I'm sure if you asked this guy, he'd probably hand over the PGA Tour trophy if it meant having his mom and dad back. I think anyone in the world would say that to anyone. But it's fair. I mean, you got to be pretty heartless to say, nah, I'm going to keep the trophy. I like this trophy. It's a nice one.
I'm pretty sure he'd trade his entire golfing career.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think anyone would say that. I really would. And, you know, I mentioned it to Aaron. I'm like, I couldn't imagine this, though. This is the happiest day of this guy's life, but it's also probably the saddest because you hand me that trophy, and I'm going to celebrate. But the first person I'm going to want to call or turn and hand that trophy to after I've won it is my mom and dad. No one seems to realize that, this is the happiest day of his life. He's happy, yes. I don't think this is the happiest day of his life because some people he really liked to have there unfortunately aren't there. But still, it's an amazing thing. It earns him an exemption for another year. He gets to play on the PGA Tour without any problems for an entire year. No questions asked. Gets to play in all the big events. This is, you know, a life-changing event for him, and it's absolutely fantastic. So happy. Excited to hopefully see him back here next year, try to defend his title, and, you know, it's just a great thing. It's always a good thing to see, you know, these like not-as-well-known guys have them put in the spotlight where they deserve to be, because PGA Tour is a hard, hard place to be. You've got 100 on a given week, 120 to 150 guys all want this, and only one of them is going to get it. So it's a tough grind. It really is. But we teased it. We're going to talk about it because there's a lot to talk about it, and that's free agency. So you know what, Russ? I'm going to give you the choice. Do we want to lead off with the NBA? Do we want to lead off with the NHL? Where do you want to go first?
Well, NBA opened up first, so as we let free agency ring, let's start with the NBA.
Let's start with the NBA. Okay. Safe to say this has been a really, really, really crazy NBA free agency. I mean, you and I, it seemed like every 5 seconds we're texting each other, this guy got signed, this guy got signed, this guy got signed, and it's wild and crazy. So we want to talk about the Pistons, so I think we should maybe... Let's start there because the Pistons didn't make maybe as big a splash. They still made a couple moves, still did a few things. I think the biggest one, the one that most probably pointed out, is the fact that we signed Derrick Rose. So I'll lead off there. I mean, I don't want to sound jaded, but because Jay is not here, somebody has to. Would this have been an amazing signing about 7 years ago? Oh, yeah, this would have been a great signing for us to get. It would have been awesome. But unfortunately, he's a little older. He's not exactly the Derrick Rose that we all remember from Chicago where he couldn't be stopped. Everybody thought he was going to be the next big, big, big thing in the NBA. So the question I ask you, Russ, is in trying to find the positive to this, what about this move actually helped us? How did we get any better signing a guy who's probably more on the later end of his career than he is the prime?
So going into free agency, what I thought their biggest hole was a backup point guard, because Reggie Jackson's had injury issues and, you know, just skill issues, if we're being honest here. And the second unit really has lacked scoring. So going after a point guard made a lot of sense. Rose, on the other hand, not going to solve the injury thing at all. There is a very real chance that there's going to be a non-zero number of games where both Rose and Reggie Jackson aren't playing.
Yeah.
So we still need a backup point guard. It's, if you're lucky, you're getting 60 games out of him. If you get any more than that, it's because you have monitored his minutes tremendously throughout the entire season, and you were lucky. Does he have the skill to outperform a two-year, $15 million contract? Yeah, he just might. And last year, he showed that he still has that ability when he's healthy. You got to hope that when you get that, you know, 7-8 seed in the playoffs again, that he's not hurt at that point, and he can help you for 7 games, hopefully. So I put him on my I don't want it to happen list when we last talked about this. I'm not I don't hate the signing. I just don't like it the fact that you really still need to address point guard.
Yeah, I'm going to get hurt. True. It really is true. I mean, you did you get a point guard? Yeah, you did. But the point guard you got, I guess the way to compare it, and then you and I, obviously, Detroit fans, we've been through this. This, to me, you know what this feels a lot like? This feels a lot like when we had Tracy McGrady. We had Tracy McGrady.
Sexy name at the end, but he's really not Tracy McGrady.
But almost the same as like Allen Iverson. We had Allen Iverson. It wasn't Allen Iverson. It was later year Allen Iverson. Same as we had Tracy McGrady. He was, you had the big name. Unfortunately, the show that was supposed to come with Tracy McGrady, he couldn't do that anymore. He wasn't the same, you know, guy anymore. So while it's cool to see, at the same time, it's like, yeah, I'll get excited if he can go out and actually have a real, real, real big impact on this team. Is kind of how I look at it.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I'm not optimistic. Hopefully, he injects some life into that second unit. He brings some of what he had in Minnesota last year. I mean, average 4 assists per game, getting 27 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really what I want to see out of a point guard. But he can score, right? 18 points a game, career 18.8 points per game. He can score. He's just not going to address that lack of a playmaker on the team.
Absolutely. It's a bit of a, you know, what if question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you see any possible chance that some point this year, assuming they both stay healthy, we see Derrick Rose in the starting lineup over Reggie Jackson?
I wouldn't be surprised at the least.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they would shake it up at some point. Because Reggie, maybe he's coming back from injury.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's coming back from a cold streak. And they say, hey, old vet Derrick Rose, let's try and catch lightning in a bottle for 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Makes a ton of sense.
Okay, great. I don't know if you've seen this one. It only happened a couple hours ago, but the Pistons
just signed it.
We had his brother at one point. Why not have the other one? The Pistons signed center forward Markieff Morris. I literally just saw it, so I have yet to see the details of the deal. Oh, here we go. Was signed using the biannual exemption, meaning some or all of a $3.6 million. Okay.
Yeah, I'm seeing the full 3.6.
Okay, okay.
Which just leaves about 1.7 left of the mid-level exception to sign anybody else.
Wait 2 weeks and we might be able to afford Cousins. So let's keep our fingers crossed. See, again, this is one where, as you read the details on it, you know, like I said, he's a power forward center with a little bit of stretch. He can get away from the basket a bit. He's going to be that, you know, backup kind of forward slash center for the team. He's definitely not going to crack the starting lineup anytime soon. So, again, I see what they're doing. They're padding positions for us, and that's kind of what you need. Depth is what you need. But at the same time, it's like, this is another one where I struggle to answer the question of, how did this take us from fighting for the 8th seed? How did this make us a better team than a team that's probably going to finish towards the bottom of the playoff picture in the East?
It doesn't really change anything. This is replacement of a body for John Luehr, and it feels kind of like a move you'd make in, like, NBA 2K. Like, oh, Markieff Morris, I know that name. Yeah, come on the bench. Derrick Rose, yeah, I remember in, like, 2012, you were sick. I throw him on there. Like, no, it doesn't really make you better. There's not a ton of upside to these. Rose, you can argue if he gets healthy, maybe there's some upside. Markieff Morris, there's no upside.
Yeah.
He's a body, right? You need the depth. It's not a bad signing. But you're not going after a guy that could grow or show some new potential here, that which could elevate you from the 8th seed.
Yeah.
He's a warm body.
Listen, he's a 6'10 forward, so he's got the size, averaged 9.4 points and just over 4.5 rebounds a game on 42% shooting and 33.5 from the line, or from the 3-point line on, just under 4 attempts a game. So none of those stats really make you go, oh, wow, but None of those stats make you question the fact that this guy is still someone who is capable of going for 10 points and five to six rebounds a game. When he shoots the ball, he's somewhat effective. Maybe don't get too settled on that three-point line. Use that 6'10 frame to try to get down low and get those putbacks for us. But again, like we both said, this is a body. This is not a... This is just seems to be what the Pistons do over the last couple years. Outside of the Blake Griffin trade, the Pistons have not ever really, in the last couple years, made a move where you go, oh, wow, yeah, that got me going. I'm excited about that one. They casually go along. They add and replace, trying to find that right chemistry. And I want to have, you know, faith in the coaching staff in the front office, but I got to wonder, at some point, are you going to make a move that is going to, like I said, take us out of being battling for the eighth seed and maybe put us in a spot where we can have some kind of home court advantage for some point of the playoffs?
I think the closest we're going to see that is the Sekou Doumbouya pick.
Yeah.
As in 3 years from now, they're trying to navigate towards it.
Yeah.
I kind of almost like that there's an admission that this core, this is as far as it's going to take us. Right? And they'll manage. They'll hopefully not be the only Detroit team to go to the playoffs again this year.
Yeah.
And then when these contracts fall off, they'll have these young, risky draft picks that hopefully two or three end up panning out. And here we go.
Oh, absolutely. And like we say, we're going on a base assumption here. We're assuming the product we saw last year isn't going to differ a lot from this year. Assuming. You don't know that. I mean, we've seen it before where the right guy being added to a situation somehow sparks something. I mean, how many years in a row did the Pistons make it way down in the air, make it pretty far in the Eastern Conference playoffs and never got anywhere? Tag in Rasheed Wallace, all of a sudden, this is a recipe for success for years
to
come.
That's a pretty good guy to tag in.
I'm not, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not comparing Markieff Morris or, you know, Derrick Rose to that. But I'm just saying, we, analyzing sports, we have to assume that productivity isn't going to change vastly from what we've had in the previous years. So we are assuming this is a team that will more than likely be fighting for a 7th or 8th seed, will more than likely be right at that 500 line, probably, you know, questionable to make the playoffs. But we could be wrong. For all we know, you tag these two players in, some draft picks end up working out, maybe we see one a lot sooner than we thought we were going to, and, you know, things turn. I'm not putting this team at all in the driver's seat for an Eastern Conference championship or even a top 4 seed. But I'm just saying, it'd be cool to see, but more likely than not, like you said, we're 2, 3, maybe even 4 years away from seeing the long-term results. And what I fear is, are you going to be able to stay committed to the certain players and the head coach who are implementing this? Because it does us no good if we get 2 of the 3 years in and then you fire the head coach and then we got to start from scratch all over again. There's no real guarantee there.
Yeah, I'd be more concerned if they fired the entire front office 2 or 3 years into this plan, because someone else is going to come in with no blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
No roadmap to where they're going.
Yeah.
And it's probably 2, 3 years more after that, at least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we said, when we talked about this and set this up, we both said that we wanted to kind of maybe do like, who was the signing you really were, you know, in love with, you think it's a good signing, and the one that you're kind of scratching your head going, I don't know what you were doing there. So, mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you go first here. Who was your kind of head scratcher? What were you thinking when you made this move, kind of move?
I'm tempted to pick all of the Knicks picks, except for like Randall and maybe Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, that's fair.
The Bullock contract looks bad. Oh, he was from a bad Pistons team.
Oh, yeah.
And Taj Gibson, right? That's another overpay who's 34, and what's he going to do? My other thought was maybe DeAndre Jordan, but apparently that was a contingency in getting Kyrie and Kevin Durant. So, hey, there's that. But I am going to end up going with Harrison Barnes.
Okay.
Anytime I can shed on the Sacramento Kings, it's probably going to be justified. And second, this is a guy that I had almost the exact same field goal percentage from the field as he did from three last year.
Mm-hmm.
39.5% from three. Respectable for a forward, right? Not terrible. 42% from the field. How is that even possible? So he's an inefficient shooter. Right? He doesn't rebound. He's averaged over 5.5 rebounds twice in his career. So you're going to give him $85 million over 4 years. What? There's a reason you're the Kings. Vladdy needs to just stop. He's ruining everyone's memory of him, and he's driving this franchise into exactly where they've been.
Exactly where they've been. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're just idling.
All right. Anytime you can mess with the Sacramento Kings. So just to be fair, I'm actually going to add in Trevor Ariza to that, because the fact that he's still in the NBA is astonishing to me, but he's going to the bottom. One that I don't hate it because I like the guy and he's fun to see, but I just want to know, what were the 76ers thinking? You can't sign Tobias Harris and not bring back Boban. Boban needs to be there. Needs to be there. That is a buddy romance that everybody loves. It is amazing seeing those two together. So,
and they've been traded together like 3 times. Oh, yeah. How are you the monster that breaks this up?
And I don't know if you saw the tweet. I think it might have been Tobias, yep. The tweet of the "you're crying." Yeah, that really
I'm
got me.
Crying,
it's good.
You're crying.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, no, I am crying.
Yeah, it's great. It really was. Jokes aside, guy got a deal in Dallas. I'm sure he's going to have some success there. Dallas is a young team with some good players. I got to say, mine, outside of Derrick Rose, because Derrick Rose really was kind of a head-scratcher for me, I had two, and these two, one of them is an actual very good player. He really is. But I need someone to explain to me why you thought giving Klay Thompson a 5-year, $190 million contract when he just got injured and you don't know the result of how he's going to rebound from that, why you thought that was a smart move. That just I get his talent. He's an amazing three-point shooter. He is a great defender. He's very, very good. He really is. He just got hurt. You haven't even seen this guy walk yet. And you just gave him $190 million. You could have gotten away with signing this guy to a 2-3-year deal at a decent enough number and save face. How do you know this guy's ever going to be able to do it again? I mean, we've seen it with Les. Grant Hill had a little infection on his foot, and he never came back the way he used to be. Because it got worse and worse, obviously. But you don't know how someone's going to rehab. You don't know how someone's going to, be great. I mean, RG3, how many times did that guy break his knees? It's just, I scratch my head.
His bones are paper mache, though.
That's fair. And I'm not saying that Klay won't come back and be the same guy that can average 30 points a game. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is, Golden State, to me, over the last, we'll say 8 years, they've never seemed to make a move that was dumb. They always seem to sign guys and get guys, mm-hmm. and acquire guys in a way where they seemed like they were really in control. And this one gave me that feeling of panic. We need to get him signed. Klay's not going anywhere. Klay, if Klay's at all smart, he knows he's in the perfect situation. He's not the one that gets double teamed. Steph's the one that gets double teamed. So he knows he's going to get open. Steph's going to pass him the ball. They're going to keep, winning in the West. So he wasn't going anywhere. This to me seemed like a real panic situation of, we don't know what to do, so let's just throw a lot of money at it and see what happens. And I think that could come back to, that could really come back to bite him. Because A, if he never, never gets better and he never really gets back to what he was, you're overpaying for a guy. But two, if you need to get rid of him, there's not a lot of teams that are going to take a, 3 years, however much is left on the deal. I don't know how the deal breaks up, in the way of year to year. But there's not a lot of guys that are going to take a 3-year, $100 million contract for a guy that really can't do it anymore. So that one to me was a bit of a head scratcher. Obviously, I could be very wrong. This time next year, he could be comeback player of the year and, be hoisting, an MVP trophy for all we know. But that one was to me. And then the other one, it's a little, he's still a good player in this league, but he's kind of, I don't understand it. And that's Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler, for 4 years, $142 million in a sign and trade to Miami. I don't know who wants this guy. He's bounced a lot, and everywhere he's been, I've heard more negative than I have positive about him. Not on the court, obviously. He's a good player on the court, but at some point you gotta accept that locker room chemistry and how these players function is very important. I mean, look at Golden State. When Durant and Green didn't get along, that caused a lot of problems for them for a while. This guy's been like that everywhere he goes. He's a Mr. Give me the ball and everybody else go away. I want to score 50 points a game every game. And that you can't do that if you want to be a winning team. So that one to me was a little bit of a head scratcher as to, one, how you think he's worth $142 million. But two, you had a decent enough young core down there. Obviously, they traded away Whiteside. I believe they traded him to Portland. So that one to me is also a little bit of a head scratcher as to why, you know, Wade left that team with some good young players headed in the right direction, and I just feel like Jimmy Butler going there could very, very easily derail that if he, you know, because he's going to walk in now knowing this is his team. Wade's not there to put him in his place. Whiteside was the guy. He's gone now too. So that one to me was a big head scratcher as to what the front office was thinking. I think you're going to see they took a step back in this one. They had a chance to go out and maybe get a guy or two to kind of put them, you know, in the moving forward direction. And I just don't think Jimmy Butler was that guy. That's just me though.
No. And he's what, 1, maybe 2 years coming off of that horrific injury.
Yeah. It's very true.
His offensive and defensive ratings were consistent this year with what his career average has been. Defense was actually a little worse. But he's still putting up offensive numbers. Even though, hey, he is 29, starting to come down the other side, I don't think Miami's going to be contending in the East. I mean, maybe we're talking about a playoff spot. I think this was more, hey, we got our market guy. We got our star to show everyone and sell tickets.
You got your ticket sale guy. You got your ticket sale guy. And I get that. I really do. But at the same time, you know, when you're looking at this, I can't see how any team goes into free agency, whether you're the team with, you know, with enough money for 4 max deals, or you're that team who knows we're not getting that first layer, but we can go after a couple second layer guys and pad positions, maybe get a good, you know, good starter or two. I can't see how any team goes in going, all right, let's just get a ticket sale guy. So that's what kind of got me is there were other players out there. There were some good players that could have gotten in. The reason I say that is as I'm going down this list, there are a lot of great names you could have gotten for cheaper than 4 years, $142 million that would have sold tickets for you. So that was more my reasoning of it, but I mean, we'll see what happens there. Flipping over to the other side though, I want to talk about the players that when you see that signing, you go, yeah, I like that. That's a good one. I understand where you're going with that. And you know what? I'm going to surprise you, guy. I'm not going to say anything about J.J. Redick. I'm not. I won't
what?
Say
no. Somebody else from Duke?
I love the signing, but I'm just not. It's a good signing, but it's the Pelicans. We don't know what the Pelicans are going to be next year. You got to assume they're going to be all right, but no one's even seen Zion dribble a basketball one time on the NBA floor. So, you know, J.J. is a great shooter, but he's not going to carry a team by himself. So, I like the signing. I think it's good. It gives Zion some experienced players around him to kind of, you know, be like, all right, we know what we're doing. We know the ball's going to you, but we're here. You need to pass it. Get it to me, and I'll help you out. So I like that for that reasoning, but that's not mine. Mine is actually a big one, and we were talking about it before the show because it's a great signing, and he might not even play half the season with the team, and that's D'Angelo Russell. I love this signing. I think this one is amazing for the fact that you just gave yourself another guard who can play both positions. So now you can move Steph back to shooting guard, which he's been his whole life up until he came to the NBA. You can move him to shooting guard on nights and let D'Angelo be the point guard. Steph will get open. He's not going to have a hard time getting open. He doesn't really need to be open to make three-pointers anyway. But then, you know, D'Angelo needs a blow. You bring in Sean Livingston, move Steph back to point guard, or keep him at shooting guard. You're ready to take Steph off the court. You can bring D'Angelo Russell in and put him shooting guard, point guard. You've given yourself three guys that can do multiple things, and it's going to be very hard to stop them. And then, you know, when Clay comes back, you got to look at maybe getting rid of him. Or, I don't know, maybe you roll the dice and run 1 year with him on the team and have one of them be, have Clay come off the bench. And I like it for that. You've given yourselves options to still not take a step backwards. This doesn't put any pressure on Steph to now go, okay, I'm not going to have Clay until January. I have to now try to average 40 points a game just to keep myself above water because I have to fill in for Clay's 20 to, I don't know. I think Clay averaged like 23, 24 points a game last year. So it doesn't take the pressure off Steph because D'Angelo Russell's good for 25 points a game. No problem. He's pretty good at that. So I like that one. I really, really like that one. And then I'm not going to go into detail about the other one. The other one for me was I just really like Kemba to Boston.
I love that one. Yeah,
exactly. I love that one. As I told you, I was talking to my dad on the way here, just kind of going over some stuff. And to be honest, it's a fair debate to have. At this moment right now, is Kemba Walker better than Kyrie Irving? It's a fair debate to have.
It is fair.
So
that was actually my favorite move.
Okay.
Incidentally, was Kemba, because yeah, we can talk about the on the court, which one's better. And I think there's going to be a lot of people throwing things at us on Twitter saying, of course it's Kyrie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this might be a little closer of a debate than we want. But then we talk about team chemistry, right? That is still a thing, how people gel.
I just told you, locker rooms still have something to do with this. You need to get guys that fit together well.
Oh, yeah. For a league that just saw Kyrie and Kevin Durant team up because, quote, I want to play with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the locker room stuff matters a lot. And Kemba Walker, let's not forget, was an all-NBA player last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's been an all-star the last 3 years. This is a stud point guard.
Yes.
And now he's going to be someone in there who's more likely to foster the growth of Tatum and Jaylen Brown and some of those other younger pieces they have. They might take a step back from, hey, one guy is a tremendous amount of skill, but likely take a step up in the sum of all their pieces. And that's very encouraging. What's shocking, Charlotte didn't get anything for him. Just let him walk in free agency.
Yeah.
Which is baffling. This was one of the worst-kept secrets in free agency, that he was going to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
How did you not know ahead of time? How did you not get something for him? Jordan's really messing up down there.
Well, a lot of it, too, was that earlier, like in free, like before free agency kicked off, but like right at the end of the year after the championship, Kemba was quoted as saying he wanted to stay in Charlotte on a max deal. He wanted to be here. So a lot of people just assumed free agency was going to come. And no matter what the rumbling was, that you were going to hear everybody, like, you know, you were going to hear Kemba go, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. I want to be here. But, I mean, like you said, it was not a very, you know, well-kept secret. Everybody kind of knew if Kyrie didn't stay in Boston, Kemba was going to Boston. So,
sure.
And they
could even trade his rights then.
Yeah.
And then Boston can give him an extra year of a contract. Like, a week ago,
yeah,
this could have happened. That's baffling to me.
But see, and the reason I like, I mean, again, I don't think there's a wrong answer to this of which guy's better, because they're both very, very good. In my opinion, there's only one guy at the point guard position that's better than both of them, and that's Steph Curry. Because I just think Steph Curry is a generationally different player than what we've seen before. Kyrie's amazing. Kyrie's a phenomenal player. You saw that when in the finals, when he was with Cleveland, when they won the title. You saw that when he became the go-to guy, not LeBron. They started giving the ball to Kyrie because Kyrie was the guy to go to. That's something you can't say you saw very often. Can you ever name a time that you saw someone say, you know what, Michael, sit down. I'll score for the Bulls. You just stand over there and watch me do this. Because that
Bugs
didn't happen.
Bugs Bunny won that one time.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny did that one time. And actually, he's quoted as saying it. Steve Kerr makes the joke that he did it one time. Because Michael passed it to him. Kerr knocked down the shot with about 30 seconds to go to give him the win. And when standing on the, you know, in the parade, he goes, yeah, in the huddle, Michael said, Steve, I'm a little scared right now, so I'm going to give you the ball and you make the shot, okay? So, I mean, that's about it. And it's fun for those kind of things. But Kyrie's an amazing player. He really is. But Kemba is a guy who has been on Charlotte the whole time and he's never had a lot of help in Charlotte, and he still managed to put up phenomenal numbers, and I just think his game is going to fit Boston a lot better. Gordon Hayward's not much of a driver. He wants to shoot the three-pointer. He wants to, you know, do that kind of thing. Kemba's perfect for that because Kemba's a guy who his main goal is get to the basket. He wants to score at the basket, which means defenses are going to collapse, and he's going to have plenty of choices. Tatum, you know, Gordon Hayward to chuck it out to, and they're going to have their open opportunities. The one thing that kind of stinks is the guy that would have gotten the rebound for that isn't there anymore because Horford's with the 76ers now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But again, we're going to put, well, we'll put that question out there. Who's better, Kyrie or Kemba? You and I can both, you know, handle the criticism we're going to get. So, but I do want to ask two questions here. So the first one I had was, and this is a pretty tough question to ask because we don't really know. Do we think we're going to see Kawhi Leonard in a Toronto Raptors jersey next year?
Oof, I love this question.
Yeah, it's a great one.
All of Toronto is waiting with bated breath. Kyle Dubas is over here making three different trades, shuffling pieces around in free agency, and no one in the hockey capital of North America gives a damn because of Kawhi Leonard. They had a helicopter following him around today.
Yeah.
It is absolutely ridiculous. I do think he stays. I hope he stays, and maybe that's a bit of that bleeding through. But this is a city that is, in short order, absolutely falling in love with him.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry seems to be out over the moon to have him there, and which is a complete 360 from when DeMar DeRozan was traded. It seemed like Kyle Lowry wanted to kill everybody. But I just think, hey, he's gone there. He's proven himself in a couple of different places, right? Won an MVP in both conferences. That's ridiculous on the face of it. So he's going to leave that now to go to the bad Clippers or the LeBron and AD Lakers, right? Kawhi might be the best player on that team at the end of the day, but I don't think he's ever going to be treated like that.
No.
In Toronto, he will literally be royalty for an entire country, right? There will be players that come from Toronto 18 years from now who go, oh yeah, Kawhi Leonard, he's the greatest ever. He's the reason I play basketball.
Yeah.
And that's what he's got there, and that's what he can build on. And I think the only reason he doesn't stay there is because he can't take the media circus that is Toronto, because he is a very private guy.
Yeah, he's a very quiet guy, and his laugh creeps the shit out of everyone.
Hey, what to do, baby?
Well, you made a point there that's going to lead into my second question, because you said he might be the best player on that Lakers team. Maybe he will never be treated that way. And I want to give my opinion real quick. And my opinion is that Kawhi is not leaving Toronto. Kawhi is just very smart and is not tipping his hand, because he's realized the next contract I sign is more than likely going to be through my prime. The next contract I get is going to be the big, big, big contract. Not to say he can't get another one down the road. LeBron's gotten how many max contracts in his life? But
All of them.
Yeah, exactly. But he knows this is the one where I can really, really, really rake it in. So he's just kind of leaving it open. He's like, I'm going to go look at the Lakers. I'm going to look at the Clippers. This is L.A. I'm from here. I want to look. But at the end of the day, he's really just setting up for Toronto to hear, okay, so they're going to offer him that, and the Clippers are going to offer him that, so we got to offer him this to keep him here. And at the end of the day, that's what he's doing. I think he's genuinely just going to say to Toronto, listen, you got to give me this much money and I won't leave. And he'd be stupid to leave. You're on a title contending team for the next couple years if none of the pieces change. So that's where I fall with that. I think he's really just playing for the bidding war and Toronto's going to be the end. But I also think he has to know that going to the Lakers probably hurts his legacy, because he's never been on a super team that was traded into a super team. He was drafted by San Antonio to a team that all their great players were draft picks. He got traded to Toronto, where they did nothing super pick wise. It was all draft and strategy. To go to LA, where they had to build that, I think does nothing help that helps him in the way of his legacy. You've already got the titles. You've got the MVPs. All you got to do now is just keep racking them in. And I don't think that LA is the way to do that.
No. And let's address the money thing for a second. he's got a max contract associated with him being in the league 8 years.
Yeah.
Every single team can only offer him that much.
Yeah.
So the only difference is Toronto can offer him one more year. So there won't necessarily be a bidding war because everyone's already giving him as much as possible. So it really comes down to, does he want to go home? Does he consider his legacy tarnished like we would if he goes to the Lakers? I mean, those are the main questions, and it's Boardman's going to get paid, and no one really knows what he's thinking.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting, but I really do feel like he's kind of he's playing it the right way. He's not one of those guys that like he's taking his time to make up the mind because whatever move you do, you're more than likely locked into for another 5-6 years, depending on where it goes. But as you said, he's not, even if he goes to that team, he's probably not, he's the best player on that team. He's might not going to get acknowledged as the best player.
No, so this I don't think he ever will be considered.
Which I think is unfair because while LeBron is an amazing player, at some point you have to start accepting there are some guys that are just as good as LeBron right now. Not all time as good as LeBron, but right now as good as LeBron.
Right.
So this one's more of a controversy thing that's gotten brought up, but I want to know if you put any stock into it. Obviously, you said KD went to Brooklyn because he wanted to play with his friend. And that's great. If that's the case, that's great. But there's also speculation that he wanted out of Golden State because he wasn't being treated as the best player on the team. He wasn't the fan favorite. And I want to know, do you take any stock in that, or do you think that's just people saying that to kind of make it sound like he was a little bit of a whiner?
That just sounds like the same drama shit that we heard before.
Yeah.
Right, with him being a traitor and no loyalty and whatnot when he left to Oklahoma City.
Yep.
I don't buy into that at all. It's not like he went to Golden State and then all of a sudden Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson just popped up out of fucking nowhere. Like, he knew what he was going into.
Yeah.
But he knew he was going on to someone else's team who was already successful, who had already knocked him out of the playoffs at a high level. No, I don't buy into that at all. He's too smart for that. He's not petty enough for that. Kyrie Irving, though.
Kyrie Irving, though. Kyrie Irving, if that story came up, I might actually believe it a little bit.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and what's interesting about that is both of them go into Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to get out of the first round this year?
No.
Maybe not.
Well, one because
Durant's back?
Well, that's what I say. One, because there's no guarantee Durant. If Durant plays, I don't think he plays before the first of the year. That's
right.
One thing. So Kyrie and old man DeAndre Jordan are kind of the centerpieces for right now. So they have to just keep it at 500 long enough to mathematically have a chance. And then if KD comes back and his game isn't rusty as shit, he may be able to get him there. But no, again, I also have to say, I think we've finally reached a pivot point where you might be able to say the East has just as much in the way of talent as the West. I mean, you've got Milwaukee, you have Toronto, you have the 76ers, you have to give Brooklyn some favoritism now. You have Boston. You have enough teams in the West or in the East now that all that powerhouse in the West pivots. And when we're talking about how great the Lakers are, I said it to my dad earlier today. I genuinely think the Denver Nuggets are going to be the best team in the West next year. I really do. I think they have a lot of talent in that team, and they really could make some difficult times for the West. But I think we've finally reached that point now where you can't say the East is a cakewalk anymore. It's got a lot of talent in it.
No, it's probably the first time since the heyday of the Bulls-Pistons rivalry where we can really say that.
But to be honest, I don't think they make, depending on where they land, because I think it's a huge stretch to say that Brooklyn is a top four seed next year. I think it's a huge stretch to say that. So you're either going to have to take on the Celtics, the Bucks, the 76ers, and I insert other team here that may, have a good run. So, no, I don't think that they make it out. Maybe next year, the year after? Yeah, probably, because you're going to probably get those two at full strength on top of a draft pick who you're more than likely going to have a lottery pick next year. So,
well, that's why I bring it up, because Kyrie, right, got to be the man.
Absolutely.
Right? And you're going home for this to be your team. And Kevin Durant's going to be out the first year, and you're going to do better the second year. How's that going to sit? that here he comes home, right, and he now needs somebody else to do better because the team physically did not do good enough the year when it was just him.
Yeah.
But he goes right back to being second fiddle.
Here's a question, though. And this is another controversy one. It really is. And we're going to get to hockey, I promise. If you're listening to this for hockey, we're going to get to hockey. But this is, we don't usually get to talk basketball this much because, you know, Justin's more of a hockey guy, so I don't want to leave him sitting there falling asleep on us. But this has to be a question then. All right, so Kyrie's the man. KD's coming there. We know how good he is. I'll ask you this, and this is a curveball, but it's one you gotta look through the league for it. Is KD one of the top two small forwards in the league right now?
Before he got injured again, yes. I don't know what he's going to look like after this Achilles injury. So I would lean towards no coming back from that.
Well, I just think if you're talking about it, no one, in my opinion, and I'll argue it with you if you want to argue with me, no one is a better small forward in the league right now than the Greek Freak. The guy's a league MVP, carried Milwaukee as long as he could. Probably could have gotten them to the finals if he had just had a little bit more of a help from someone. Not to say he didn't get help, but need a little bit more. Because they were great, and the only guy that could stop him was the guy that stopped him, and that's Kawhi Leonard, who I think is the second best small forward in the league. So I've named two names, and I haven't even talked about LeBron yet. So
LeBron's pushing top five at this point, honestly.
It's fine.
He's
older now. I mean, he's not old in the way, like, I think he's only like 35, but you think LeBron's been in the league since he was 18 years old. So LeBron's played
16 years.
He's played 16 years. Kobe came in the league in, I think, 96 and retired in 2014, something like that. So Kobe only made it 18, something like that. I could be wrong on the numbers, but Kobe only made it. Like, he didn't make it as long as everybody thought. So he's great. KD's great. And I'm like, we can have this debate on it, but I think that KD is, he's a top three, top four small forward in the league right now.
And it'll be worse when he comes back from this Achilles injury, which typically limits your explosiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have to be smarter, more technical, and not rely on his athleticism, which is a concern for someone who's, what is he now? He's 30.
Yeah.
Right? So 12 years in the league, we talked about LeBron's miles. Coming back from an Achilles injury with that many miles on you already, he's still going to be good. He's still really good.
Yeah.
But what are we talking about, 85% Kevin Durant?
Well, the upside to KD, though, is KD is also a spot-up shooter. So,
and that'll help.
It'll help because he doesn't need that explosiveness to kind of find his spots. Kyrie's going to collapse the defense. It's going to leave KD with some openings. And again, I'm not trying to put KD down because he's injured. I'm just trying to say these guys who we cemented as phenomenal, and they are, they're Hall of Famers. Kevin Durant is going to walk into the Hall of Fame. He's an amazing player. He's one of the most epic scorers I can ever remember seeing. And I'm talking about Jordan. I'm talking about Allen Iverson. I'm talking about Larry Bird. I'm talking about LeBron. He is one of the most Kobe. Sorry, Kobe. Don't get mad at me. He's one of the most amazing scorers I've ever seen. But at this particular point in his career, he might not be a top three small forward in the league. He really might not. And on top of the fact that depending on where they decide to put him, I think they're going to put him at power forward. You got to start thinking about the fact that Zion's coming into the league. So I think they're going to more put Zion at power forward because he's a bit bigger of a guy, but he's fast enough to play small forward. So youth is coming, and you're not necessarily going to be a top guy anymore. We'll see what happens. But I do think that Kyrie is the man on that team until KD can prove otherwise. So
okay. We'll
see what happens with it. Wow, that was a lot of basketball.
That's probably more than we've covered in the last month.
Yeah, that's very true. So, want to talk about some hockey?
I would love to.
Okay. We are out of my depth now, and we are entering your Thunderdome. So I'm going to hand the reins over to you. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about what the Red Wings did, and we'll go from there.
Oh, we're going to start with the Red Wings.
we don't have to if you don't want to, but I figure let's get out of the way.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call it pain necessarily, but yeah. it's
You want? I'm going to call it pain.
I'm collecting my thoughts.
Yeah, collect your thoughts. I'm going to call it pain for one thing. I don't know what the hell Philpott does for us, other than lets Anthony see you go back to wing.
That's the exact thing. That's the best thing I could say about him. And that's what I have written down. Double-A to wing.
Well, that's the quote I keep reading. It lets Anthony see you become a winger again. Great. Fantastic. All it means is he's got to take the face off. Come on. Let's go. Give me something that's going to make me happy about a guy we had 8 years ago being back in Detroit.
Well, expected goals for the wings when Athanasi is playing wing versus center. The differential's better.
Okay.
He produces better. He takes the top off the defense better and stretches it out, which helps zone exits. Right. He's a lot better as a winger where he can go and do a lot of the things that he's very good at.
Yep.
Whereas center had more defensive responsibility where he was not very good at.
Mm-hmm.
So, in theory, that's what Philpott lets him go do. And Philpott is, honestly, he's a fourth-line center who should be used in more of a defensive role and not really trust on to drive play offensively.
Yep.
He's going to end up a third-line center here,
mm-hmm.
which he's a little miscast, but hey, it's a two-year deal, $3 million, right? So you're not really overpaying by too much, and the term's short enough.
Yeah.
It's unexciting. It's not sexy. It's another 35-year-old, which does not present any upside. But Yzerman knew him from his time in Detroit and Tampa, and it's just a steady one that he will kick him down to the fourth line if it turns out one of these youngsters really are ready. But everything that Yzerman said makes me think he thinks there it's unlikely that someone like Valeno is going to be ready at center to come up this year.
That was actually going to be my question, though. To you, does this feel like a Stevie's boy kind of signing? Kind of a, I know what I'm getting from you, so I'm comfortable with signing you. Even though you're 100%. Not even though you're not a youth guy, even though, like you said, you're not going to drive the offense for us, you're more of a safe third, fourth line center who's going to be more on the defensive side. This team, because it feels like that to me. That's the first thing I said when I saw that they signed him. I was playing golf with a coworker, and I said, "Oh, good, Stevie signed someone that he's had in multiple teams. That's great. I like Phil Play. He was cool, but this to me feels like a Stevie safe pick."
Oh, absolutely, it's 100% what it is. He knows what he's getting.
Yep.
And he's a player that's going to accept his defensive role. Right? Like that's what he went to the Islanders for. Part of that. Revamp of their entire unit to make them one of the best defensive teams in the league last mm-hmm. year.
Oh yeah.
Granted, he was not the reason, right? He was just a contributing factor.
Yep, definitely.
But that seems to be something that is driving Yzerman's decision.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
So we got two other guys so far.
Yeah.
We'll start with Nemeth. So coming over from Colorado, 27-year-old Swedish defenseman. Stop me if you've heard this. Coming to Detroit, a 6'3 Swedish defenseman.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, just recently. It's become, just as popular as it always has been.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very much a hint at what the blueprint is for Yzerman. We saw it with the top two picks in the draft, and now we're seeing it again with Nemeth, of these bigger defensive D-men who can complement your offensive puck-moving defenseman.
Yep.
Right? This guy, on a two-year deal, he's a Moritz Seider placeholder. That's exactly what he is. That's exactly what he's going to be. He's going to go sit next to, like, Mike Green, let Mike Green do the offense, and play back. Last 2 years, he has a 46% Corsi 4 percentage. So a little less than half of the shots when he's on the ice go to his team, right? Not great. You don't want to be less than 50%. But his defensive zone starts with 66%. So two-thirds of the time, he's starting his defensive zone, but he's pushing the shot share close to 50-50, right? So that's effective, right? He's done well defensive expected goals against, so he's a good D-man defensively,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's about all you're going to get for him. And really the biggest value as a fan that we're going to see out of him is it's another guy that Mantz fought. It is what it is. He's a depth guy, and it's probably a sign that there's not as many young D coming up from Grand Rapids as we might hope this year. Speaking of Grand Rapids, though, the other signing Picard. He is going to go to Grand Rapids. He's going to mentor Larson, be another goalie down there, because they did lose a few there. Rybar and Harry Sateri are gone. So it's a signing. Woo, it's a goalie, but he's strictly for Grand Rapids.
Okay. And, I mean, Jay and I both mentioned we, you know, goalie is where we wanted, so we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing if, say, he showed up in training camp and he'd out Bernier for that backup spot.
Yeah.
Picard really hasn't proven himself to be a steady pro. But Bernier hasn't really either recently.
I was about to say, Bernier hasn't necessarily made you go, oh, yeah, he's good, though, too.
Yeah, no, it's not really inspiring once we get past Jimmy Howard, who had a good season last year. But Stevie's already come out saying Picard's not anything but a mentor. He's going to sit there, and Philip Larson, probably 2-3 years away, he's supposed to be our next big game gold, and Picard's going to be there to try and groom him.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm kind of with that. I understand that it makes sense, and it's adding to the depth. If Bernier or Jimmy kind of forget how to play the game of hockey at some point, it's nice to know we have someone, I guess, would be the way to
word
right.
it. And if a Jimmy trade comes, we have a NHL-ready guy with NHL experience that we can pull up to be the backup.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So it gives a bit of security there.
Yeah, that's always nice.
Outside of that, Wings haven't really done anything. There's some Nikita Gusev rumors floating around that, hey, it might be nice if Detroit tries to get in on there. The talented young Russian forward, Vegas is trying to offload because they don't want to pay him a salary because they are in cap hell already.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something that the Wings can pounce on, an inopportune situation for Vegas. For what it's worth, Yzerman did draft Gusev while he was in Tampa. So there is a bit of history there. If anyone's going to know him, it should be one of the guys that scouted him.
Yeah, that's true.
So if he is up to this billing, Steve Yzerman's got a good eye on him, and it'll be interesting to see what they do about him.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I like, you know, I like the idea that Stevie, you know, if Steve's going to go after him, it's going to be his guys he knows inside and out, you know. I think part of it might just be from years of Ken Holland. Part of me would like to see Stevie, and he kind of did it in the draft with Sider, just go out and make a splash, take a risk. If you're gonna swing and miss so big that you were swinging like to hit the, you know, the stadium in the next state, but just swing big and let's see what happens. I wouldn't mind it. That I get, we don't have the money to go out and sign these superstar big names, but I mean, there's still talent out there. There's still guys you can get, and it'd be nice to see. We can't really be any worse, so let's try to work towards better.
Yeah, that's sadly kind of true.
It is.
It is getting better, right? We do have some young guys that are coming along, but yeah, none of these signings were upside. None of these are really expected to have any chance to pay off more. Right? You're not going to get surplus value out of these signings. Nemeth at $3 million. Market value. That's market value for what he's going to be. Valtteri Filppula, it's a little more than he's worth, right? But you're paying for the experience, I suppose, which is not always a good strategy, but it's what they did. Leaves them about $5.5 million in cap space. Stevie's talked about maybe adding another forward or a defenseman. Yeah, I would really love if they took an upside guy. Maybe it's a bit of a risk on short term. Right, maybe it's acquiring Gusev and using some of that cap space to take on a bad contract from Vegas to make it work. Right, weaponize it. Take somebody with some upside who has a chance to surprise you and do better.
Yeah.
That's how you create value.
Listen, this city has gone long enough without seeing a big name, almost kind of like the Pistons too, like seeing a big name who is quasi in their prime come to this team. We're more accustomed to guys who are much past their prime, or never really had a prime, being on this team. So to say that, I don't know that I'd fault Stevie. I think Stevie would get a little bit of a pass if he goes out and goes after a guy where you look at it and go, all right, you overpaid a little bit, but he's a name, he's a good player, and if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't pan out. But at least it's something different. It's something we haven't seen, as opposed to bringing in, you know, I'm not going to compare Phil Pula to him because he's not, but it's kind of like bringing in Vanek the last couple of years. He's a good hockey player, but he's not nothing. He's that signing does nothing to push us up the mountain anymore. It kind of just feels like a body. So,
yeah.
And to be fair, that is about it. Phil Pula's ability to help on defense and a little bit of more of that veteran presence for the youth. I mean, you said it. That's about all he's going to contribute to this, and that doesn't add up to a lot of extra wins than we're probably already going to get. So
no, it probably won't.
So we'll see what happens there. Well, we'll keep...
I will say, at the very least, he didn't give out like a Nielsen contract.
Yeah,
he didn't sign like a 33-year-old aging center to a 5-year deal. So that's a win over past years.
I'll take that. That shows he at least knows somewhat what he's doing. All right, well, we'll keep this thing moving along. I'll let you go first here, and I'll give you the choice. You want to give me your like pick or your head-scratcher pick? Whichever one you want to give, I'm interested to hear what it is.
Oh, I'll start with the bad, because this team confuses me sometimes.
Okay.
So they're drafting well. They're bringing up good prospects. But the last couple years in free agency, they've done some baffling things, like saying, hey, Jay Beagle, that's who I want to overpay for. Or this year, my worst contract so far, saying Tyler Myers is going to be a top-pairing defenseman for you. No, the guy doesn't drive play. His defensive play numbers have been awful,
yeah,
which is exactly what you want for a top-pairing. So good luck, Vancouver. He has no discipline. His really only strength is he's good at shot creation once you're already in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, if Elias Pettersson is flying around like he did last year, he can set you up in the zone, and then, all right, Tyler Myers just sit there with a stick up waiting for a one-timer. You're paying $6 million every year for the next 5 years for a pylon with a stick? Good job, Vancouver. It's one step backwards, two step back, or one step forward, two step back. Only feels like three backwards at this contract. But that's an unforgivable bad trade. I will say there was rumors that he would get eight, and Luongo retiring and that cap recapture hitting them is probably the only thing that stopped that from happening. Because I don't think they were bidding against anyone else. Not at that price.
Okay. Yeah. I got nothing good to say. That's sad. I'm going to word it this way.
Okay.
I have one I would like to make as a head scratcher for this player making this decision.
Okay.
And I have one I would like to tell this franchise what I think. So I'm going to, two separate teams, two separate entities here, but I'm going to do them both. One, I just want to ask this guy a question very calmly. You are probably one of the top three goalies in the league. Florida was the decision you thought was a good career move. Sergei Bobrovsky, you're about to have a very, very rough 7 years. I'm going to say that right now. I don't get it. I don't. I don't know where else he probably could have gone or who else would have been able to afford a 7-year, $70 million deal with him. But I got to feel like there was someone out there better than Florida to be your choice. You just watched Luongo get freaking curb stomped left and right, and you thought, hey, let's give this a try. Maybe I can do better. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Luongo was a good goalie at some point in his career.
At some point. Maybe
some
not
point.
In the last couple of years.
So that one is a little bit of that. When I saw the signings, because I like this guy. I like Bobrovsky. I think he's good. And I just was like, really? That's where you wanted to be? Florida? Somebody in the NHL had to have enough money and have enough of a need for a goalie that you could have gone to a quasi-contender.
I mean, I will stand up for them a little bit that having Huberto, Barkov, Trocheck, Dadonov, Hoffman,
Ekblad,
a ton of offense. Well, yeah, I was just talking forwards.
Yeah, that's fine.
But yes, there's also Ekblad. They signed Strahlman, too, who isn't half bad himself. So you'd
okay.
think if I can score less than four goals allowed, right, we should win a lot with that offense. And that's kind of been their undoing the last couple of years, is just not playing defense and not having good goalies. So they're trying to throw money at the problem. And for a guy who relies on his athleticism a lot,
yeah,
to sign a 7-year deal to a 30-year-old goalie, it might look okay this year. It might look okay next year.
Yeah, but it's not going to look okay in 2023, 2024.
No, it's going to start looking bad, yeah, especially when he's the highest paid player on that team.
Oh, and see, but
by a healthy margin.
That's the point I wanted to make, too, is you did just make a very good one. You threw a lot of great forward names there, some of them which I am a fan of. Huberto, I like him. But, one, your theory is predicated on the fact that you know for a fact your offense is capable of producing 3-plus a night. You got to understand that if you shaky defense and the fact that a goalie can't do it all by himself, you have to figure that you're probably going to have Bobrovsky giving up 1 to 2 a night, give or take. I mean, his athletic ability is there.
Least.
So that's what I'm saying. You can have all the offense in the world, but if that offense isn't consistently putting up 3-plus a night, you're not going to be fantastic. And I like Bobrovsky. I think he's good, but I'm with you too. 7 years. This dude is going to be 37 when you're done with him, if he makes it to the end of the deal.
Yeah, no, he's going to be 34 when they're done with him.
I thought you said he was 30.
They'll be paying him for, they'll be paying him for the rest.
Oh, okay, yeah, you threw me off there. I'm like, did I have the age wrong? Yeah, no, I get it. But I'm just saying, like, you signed this guy into his retirement pension. Like, you really, you're walking him to, he's in Florida, so he can retire there. That's great. But, I saw that one, and I was just thinking, you know what? Somewhere had to have enough money and a shorter deal for you to have taken and walked into a contender. Because I want to see Bobrovsky lift a cup, and it's not going to happen in Florida. Barring something massively monumental changing there, it's not going to happen in Florida. So we'll see. But yeah, that was one that really just kind of, I was like, it didn't sit well. All right, Russ, so that's my player. So now I'm going to move over to the team, because I just don't feel well about this, and I need to make the comment. So I'm gonna make a petition, and I would like you to sign it. I am petitioning that we need to suspend the Dallas Stars from being allowed to make free agency moves for 1 year, because they are stupid and clearly don't know what the hell they're doing. Corey Perry, I get it's a 1 year deal, that's fine. But Joe Pavelski to a 3-year, $21 million contract. The guy's 34. He's entering his 14th year in the league, I believe, or something like that. Yeah. Dallas, what do you got? What are you doing? What are you doing? Like, seriously? Corey Perry. Anaheim Ducks didn't even want him. That's not a step in the right direction. He's going to give you guys all, like, some disease, because he's a carrier for these things.
Is this a Mumps reference?
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
And then Joe Pavelski. Come on, man. The teal is real. You're leaving the teal for Dallas? Okay. All right.
I think that was more San Jose couldn't afford to pay him with their cap crunch. So he decided, I'm going to go where I can get $7 million a year.
Yeah. That just to me was like, I don't know what you're thinking. You're allegedly an NHL franchise, and your decision making of two signings make me think you may have gone to the school of Ken Holland. So
I'll give you Corey Perry as yikes. Pavelski is a very useful power play option.
Okay.
$7 million might be a little rich. But as far as offensive expected goals for is at even strength,
yep,
he's one of the best players in the league.
Okay.
Defense, he's got some liability to him. But on the power play, that's where he really shines. And if you just want to say, hey, he's the last guy on the first power play, or he's starting to anchor your second power play,
yeah,
well, then Dallas can finally have that secondary scoring that they haven't been able to find since, I don't know, Brett Hull had his skate in the crease.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a while since they've had anything but just the top line.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives them at least a chance to, hey, maybe you play one of them on the second line with him, right, and we can get something going.
Yeah.
Probably overpaid a little bit, but that's the name of the game in free agency. Bad decisions are made come July 1.
All right, well, then, but you just gave me a little bit of a scouting report on where he's good and where he's useful. You know the NHL and the salaries and all that a lot better than I do, so I'll refer to you on this. If you're going to go after a guy and give him $7 million a year, wouldn't you like that scouting report to be a little more complete in all the areas than he's just really effective in one or two spots?
Well, I could give you the old hockey version of it, too, that, oh, he's good in the room, and he's a captain, and he tries hard. He knows how to lead guys.
But he's not going to be the captain on Dallas. He's not a locker room guy, that's great. Over the years, we've had a bunch of guys that are great in the locker room. That's fine, but then the locker room is something. I've said that multiple times on the show, but for $7 million a year, I want a 34-year-old guy who's going to be 37, 38 by the time this deal is over. I want him to be a lot more complete of a player if I'm investing $7 million a year in his skill set.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't sign a 34-year-old to a 3-year contract, period.
Yeah, that's fine.
But, yeah, $7 million is a little rich.
Well, I wouldn't.
Radulov's going to be there making 6.25.
And I'm with you. I wouldn't sign a 34-year-old guy to a three-year deal either, but we got to live in the reality that is Dallas, so. That being true, you have a guy now who's 34, gonna make $7 million a year. That guy better be like the best 34-year-old hockey player in the world to get $7 million out of me a year, because anything less than, in my opinion, anything less than, and I don't know what he would demand, but I have to think anything less than or more than 4.5, 5 is just stealing.
Yeah, it seems like a lot. I'm doing a quick search here on cap hit for anyone over 34, well, 34 and older. He is the 7th highest paid player who's 34 years or older. It's Zach Parise and Ryan Suter.
Okay.
Their contracts look bad right now, and they signed them a long time ago.
Okay.
They were like 8-year deals. Dustin Byfuglien, Brent Burns, Ryan Getzlaf, and Henrik Lundqvist. Those are the people. That's the entire list of people that are his age or older, making more money.
Okay.
Yeah,
but half those names you mentioned, I think I would probably give more money to. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, Burns and Byfuglien are arguably worth that because they play at a more premium position where it's harder to find what they do.
We had the conversation earlier a couple shows ago. Henrik Lundqvist, I would give him. For what he does for the Rangers night in and night out, I would give him the money. The only guy I heard on that list that I would maybe question is Getzlaf.
Well, I wouldn't play Parise and Suter anymore.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I'm just saying, the one name that stuck out to me is one that I don't even think I can make an argument for the money is Getzlaf. But that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's at 8.25 as the 2nd highest paid player who's at least 34.
Yeah, see, that's no. So, okay, well, that's fair. No, that's fine. But so that's just to me. When I saw that, all great to Pavelski, as Jay says, pay that man his money. But 3 years, $21 million, I have to wonder what Dallas executive looked at that and went, this is a smart move. This is a smart, smart move.
A guy who wasn't worried about 2 years from now because he's worried he won't have a job. That's the only thing I can justify with.
He's the Colorado executive who's just lighting up as he's making these deals. Okay, that's great. So we talked about the bad. Let's talk about the good real quick. Of all these signings, there has to be one or two that sticks out to you as, I like that. That is a smart move.
Absolutely. So I went through a lot of them. There were some that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the deal that Aho ended up with because Montreal, when they offer sheeted him, undercut him a lot, right? He was worth at least 9. He's getting 8.45 because they wanted to just get under that tier of RFA compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolina matches it right away because, of course, they do because it was a dumb contract.
I was going to say, I thought I read that Aho stayed in Carolina, so I just wanted to double check that one. Okay.
He did. Yeah, we had all this drama about, hey, is any RFA going to get signed to an offer sheet?
Mm-hmm.
And we had one, and it was a dumb contract.
Yeah.
There was no way Carolina was ever going to not match that. So actually focusing on deals that made sense, right, and it wasn't just another team gift-wrapping you your own player back, I'm actually going to go to San Jose for Teal Israel for this steal that they got for Timo Meier.
Okay.
$6 million a year, 4 years. The guy's 22. The key is it ends the year before his UFA year. So they get him on an RFA on his next contract, too, which okay. is huge. You want to talk about offensive play driving, he's been one of the best. Transition play, he's been one of the best in the league. He's not terrible defensively, which doesn't sound like a compliment, but usually when you talk about guys that are great offensively and great in transition, they kind of have that weakness defensively. He really doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to end up, I think if we look 5 years from now, this will look like the best deal that came out of this year. This is David Pastrnak making 6 2/3. Right? This is what they've signed him to. And they talk about Boston doing a tremendous job with their cap because, hey, no one makes more than 7 except for David Backes, which, yikes, him making so much. But this is exactly what it is. They locked up their young stud when they were up against the cap, and they got it done. And I love it. In a offseason full of overpays, this wasn't.
Okay. I like it. I do. I'm with you. I had two. Mine were pretty basic, pretty simple. One was, you know, I said a little bit of this is going to be emotion today. So one of them, more of an emotion because I like this guy. I know you like this guy too. So,
mm-hmm.
And I especially like it because it's going to just dab the needle in just a little bit. Because I remember seeing one of you send me a message saying, I really don't want to like the Devils.
Oh, so, damn it, that was me. Yep. I know what you're talking.
I'm going with a one-year, $5 million contract that went to one Wayne Simmons. I like this guy. This guy is a great, great hockey player. And it's just fun. This New Jersey team's kind of, they're doing a few things. They're looking good. They've got some talent. So I'm not going to root for them actively, but if they're on and I happen to see it, I'm going to watch for a minute. I'm going to watch Wayne Simmons piss everybody off. I'm going to watch Wayne Simmons play some great hockey, and it's going to be fun. I like this one. I wish they would have signed him to more or to longer, but he's a good hockey player, and it'll be fun to watch him play. Get to see him with Hall, see him with out there with Hughes, out there with some great young talent. So it'll be fun.
What is up with the trend of my childhood spurns of my existence having good off seasons this time?
Yeah,
Colorado, great. New Jersey. Subban, Simmons, and Hughes.
Yep.
Are you kidding me?
I completely forgot about Subban, too. I keep forgetting that he is not still in Nashville. I really do. So,
yeah. That was a steal of a trade, too.
Yeah, it was. Oh, God, yes, it was. They made away with that one. And it kind of ties together, because speaking of the Predators, my other one's the hands-down, in my opinion, best one, and that's Matt Duchene going to the Nashville Predators. I don't think I've held back in the last couple of years at saying how big of a fan I am of this guy. I think he is an amazing hockey player. I liked watching him with the Blues or with the Blue Jackets this past year. It's a big deal. I mean, 7 years, $56 million. He's 28, so I mean, I'm not good at math, but the guy's going to be in his mid-30s when he's done with it, and I hope he plays every single second of it here in Nashville. They're a good hockey team. I like him. They're taking a big hit, losing Subban. But, I mean, and they play different positions, but I think getting a star like Duchene's going to help out a little bit because where they lost in defense, they definitely picked up in offense. So that was me. I wanted to find a defenseman signing that I really liked, but unfortunately there weren't very many that I was very happy about. So it was tough.
Blame that on the market because there was not a defenseman out there really that you could sign to a good deal.
No,
I mean, maybe Gardner ends up signing on a value contract because he's not signed.
Yeah.
Other than that, there was shit out
but
there.
I'm just looking here, and this thing's ranking, like, players top to bottom. And, I mean, yeah, outside of Gardner, who doesn't have anything yet, the next – I'm using air quotes here because we all know how much I hate this guy. Air quotes. The next best defenseman is Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw, it escaped from me now. I saw Strawman signed a deal with the Panthers, so that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. It's the market. There really wasn't. But, and then to be honest, the good goalies, I mean, two of them are, you know, closer to 40 than they are 20. And Peter Mrazek stuck with the Hurricanes. So there wasn't a lot to I mean, I like Mike Smith to Edmonton, but I feel bad for Mike Smith having to end his career in Edmonton. So it's rough. It is rough.
Yep. Yeah, how about him and Cam Talbot basically switching spots, too?
Yeah, yeah. So
you got an old goalie you don't want anymore? I've got an old goalie I don't want anymore.
So, I mean, to be fair, that was, I mean, you pretty much had a handful of guys you could really favor on it. I did like the Aho signing. It's just when I was putting my notes together, he wasn't officially in Carolina, so I kind of had to leave him off to the side, but I like that one as well. The one I actually really enjoy the most, because I think he's going to flourish, is I actually like the Phil Kessel going to the Coyotes.
It's a very interesting trade.
I have no idea what Pittsburgh was thinking. There has to have been, in my opinion, there has to have been something in that locker room. And you mentioned it, that, you know, he may rub some people the wrong way in the locker room and all that, because it doesn't make sense from a hockey standpoint. This guy is still, albeit a odd looking individual and out of shape man, a very good goal scorer. So you're eliminating goals. There had to have been something.
Yeah, I mean, he's bad defensively. Yeah. Like, objectively, he's bad. But there's only so many 30 goal scorers in the league, and he's consistently one of them.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying is, I said earlier about Pavelski, he has to check off all the boxes. If you're a guy who 100% you know he's going to get that puck in that net, I'll take a little bit of a deficiency on the other side. It's the same as if you're a stone-cold defenseman who I can guaranteed put out there and I know no one's getting by you, I'll take it for the fact that you only put up 4 goals a season. But if you're going to – you have to be really, 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 really good at one aspect for me to be okay with the lack of other aspects. And I'll give that to Kessel. Not good defensively, but guess what? The dude can put the puck in the net. And like you said, isn't that the point of this game?
Yeah, it's kind of the point to, you know, score more than the other team.
Yeah.
Defense plays a role in that. But his differential is still positive.
Exactly. So I don't know. That one's going to have to be explained to me in more detail by someone far smarter than me. Because I like it, because I think he's going to shine with the Coyotes, but I think Pittsburgh didn't necessarily make the greatest move there getting rid of this guy, because while you still have Crosby, while you still have Malkin, while you still have other talented players, this guy did one thing, and he did one thing very well, and it's one thing you need to do to have more wins than the team you're playing, or more goals than the team you're playing. So,
and it's something Arizona did very poor last year.
Yeah.
I believe Brad Richardson led them in goals.
Wow.
In 2018, not 2008.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. But, again, a lot of great moves, a lot of great stuff. And I'm sure over the next couple months we'll see more stuff happening. We'll get more into it. Obviously, you know, football's just around the corner. Hockey, they're going to be starting up what feels like. I mean, it's a couple months away, but before we know it, it's going to be happening. Obviously, once we get back to full strength, we'll dive in and three of us will break down the Red Wings. Who are any of these young guys going to see the ice? Who do we see from last year's draft coming up and maybe contributing? It's going to be a great time. Russ, it's another great show. Before I let you go, I got to say happy 4th of July. I know I'm going to see you, but I'll say it anyway.
Yeah, happy Freedom Free Agency Day.
There you go. Happy Freedom Free Agency Day. That was Russ Ivanek, smartest guy on this show. Makes me sound a lot smarter than I really am. And, of course, we missed you today, Jay. Assuming you actually listened to this episode. We know it's hit or miss on if you're going to listen to the episode or not. But assuming you listened, we missed you, buddy. Excited to see you tomorrow at the barbecue. And I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.